Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode one of Let's Talk Life. Tonight, I have the distinct honor of talking to my very first guest, who is now appearing on my very first podcast, and his name is Jim Marin, also known as my father. Tonight, we are going to be discussing something that is of great interest to both of us, that being the current political climate, and really politics in general. Our first topic of discussion is going to be where we were. Pre-Biden administration, what was wrong, what needed to be fixed, why did Biden get the victory? What caused this? The second thing is going to be where we currently are. Where do we stand now that Biden is president? And finally, we're going to finish tonight's episode by talking about where we are heading. Real quick, I just want to take a minute to explain to everybody how the podcast is actually going to work for those who are not aware of that just yet. Each week, I'm going to have the honor of talking to a different guest. What we talk about on the podcast is going to be centered around that guest, which is exactly why tonight we are talking politics. Each week, that guest will appear on the show. We will talk for really however long we want. There is no time limit. There are no constraints other than just to talk, because that's what I want this podcast to be about. People sharing their experiences, sharing their insights, and just having a good time, which is something I've been wanting to do with my very first podcast for a while now. So without any further ado, let's get into it, and I hope everybody enjoys the very first episode of Let's Talk Life. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, I would now like to take a minute to introduce my very first guest of the very first episode of the podcast, my father. James, please introduce yourself.
Luke, it's great to be here with you on the first edition of your podcast. I think you picked a great topic. What could be more important than life in all of its many manifestations? And life has certainly been interesting for those of us in America over the last couple of years. And, life has really changed over the last couple of weeks or so. So it's a good time to kind of, reflect a little bit on as you say, where we were, how we got here, and what's going to be most important going forward, what's really going to make the difference. So I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk to you about all of these important things.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And, I think that I know this is something that we've talked about before extensively, but I think that it's something everybody should be aware of. That being that, politics, I always like to tell people it's not something that when people say, oh, I'm not into politics, so I don't choose to, get involved with politics. I take offense to that only because, I feel it is something that it does not only affect, our well-being, but our livelihood and who we are as people. I think it's something that, everybody needs to pay attention to. It's almost like we should have, everyone should have a social obligation to be involved in politics, because as we saw, with this election, which was probably the craziest, well, I don't know about, your lifetime, but certainly so far the craziest election cycle of my lifetime. We can't take for granted, how we got to where we are now. There's obviously a reason for it. And that's something that obviously we're going to discuss on the pod tonight. So starting off, I just want to cover a little bit, because I know you have probably a lot to say on this specific section here, that being where we were. So pre-Biden administration, let's just kind of think about where things stood. And what do you think, sparked the, what was the biggest thing you saw that sparked sort of the enthusiasm for people to vote for Joe Biden? Was it him specifically, the candidate, or was it, other factors? I want you to speak on that for a minute.
Well, this is actually something that I've thought a lot about. And one of the things I've been thinking about is what kind of special or different or particular perspective we might bring to this discussion that is a little bit different or maybe a little less over talked about than some of the other punditry that's occurred around the election. So as you know, I am a professional communicator. I'm a communications consultant. I'm a writer, and this is what I've been doing for 40 years or so, you know, both in journalism briefly, but also for a variety of clients in different parts of the business world who have need of communication services. So I tend to look at things from a communications standpoint. And I think that, first of all, I think that if we had not had the coronavirus pandemic, I think there's a very good chance Donald Trump would have won re-election and would be president today. Because before the pandemic began, things were, except for the fact that, you know, as we believe, Donald Trump was an authoritarian, you know, racist demagogue who was a danger to the very idea of democracy in this country. You know, I think there were a very large number of people in the country who thought that things were basically okay, who look at things through primarily an economic prism, and the economy was very strong. Now, granted, Trump was handed a very strong economy by his predecessor, Barack Obama. So be it. You know, he didn't do anything so dramatic to screw things up. So I think that it is very likely that had we not had the coronavirus pandemic, we would have had a so-called status quo election, which is basically an election where when there's an incumbent, people say, well, you know, things are basically okay. And again, the economy is a very important factor for many people. But, you know, that would have driven, and it, you know, that remained till the day that Trump left office. That remained the area of his administration where people gave him the most credit was for the economy before it all went south. I think there's a very good chance that all of Trump's kind of existential threats to the country aside, I think he probably would have been reelected. I think he would have been a very difficult person to beat. When the pandemic emerged, I think that it revealed finally just how bankrupt his administration always had been, just in terms of basic competence. There was never a coherent response developed to meet the coronavirus. A lot of the responsibility and the burden was shifted to the states. Trump has much said, at least once, I take no responsibility. You know, he never really leveled with the American people about how serious the pandemic was and what we all needed to do to get through. And this is where I think this is a long way of coming around to the communications point. Even with the pandemic and even with the threat that it posed to the economy, I think that if Trump had leveled, if he had communicated differently with the American people, if he had leveled with the American people, if he had been honest and transparent, and if he had communicated in a forthright and realistic way, as I think President Biden is trying to do right now, he's trying to strike a deliberate contrast. But I think if Trump had done that, if he had just communicated differently, I think that when leaders are perceived as being honest and authentic and straightforward, they will tend to get the benefit of the doubt, even if things are not going well. But, you know, to paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, you can't fool all the people all the time, you know, and, you know, Trump's whole career was built on gaslighting people. And, you know, the stakes were so high this time around. And I think a sufficient number of people in the country just didn't buy it. They just didn't buy it, and they saw the pandemic kind of lay bare the bankrupt nature of his leadership, which was manifest in his failure to communicate in a leaderly way about what was going on. And I think that hurt him. And as bad as the pandemic has been, if he communicated about it differently, and if he had been more forthright with the American people in talking about what his response was and what the entire nation needed to do to get through, I think he might very well have survived it. But, you know, having failed to communicate in a leaderly way to be a true leader, I think he sunk himself.
You know, I couldn't agree more with everything you said, obviously. I think that, you know, I definitely think that the coronavirus, and this is something we talked about, you know, when the election was initially getting going, we actually talked about how the coronavirus played a role, you know, in the numbers we were seeing, the positive, the numbers for Biden initially, you know, in the early polling. I remember we talked about both being very cautiously optimistic about what we were seeing because, you know, we remember 4 years ago, we got fooled, you know, by the polls, so they can't always be trusted. But I think that you have to give some, you know, credit. Let me ask you, do you think that any credit should be given to factors besides, you know, coronavirus for all the, you know, it's terrible to say, but for the, you know, I guess the good it did in sort of, you know, swaying people's opinions of Trump and not being able to handle it well, handle it absolutely terribly. But do you think there's something else there? Was it organizing? Was it some sort of people saw Joe Biden as this being able to unify, you know, the party and sort of everybody kind of, you know, I think it was when those endorsements came in from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, you know, these people who are endorsing him and sort of, you know, getting behind him, there had to be some sort of, you know, as we were saying, some sort of, you know, collective, you know, agreement that yes, this is who we want leading us. This is, you know, the man to lead, you know, the Democratic Party, at least for the next 4 years, right? Which I know a lot of people are saying, oh, it's, you know, not going to be more than one term, which honestly is fine. You know, I think Biden himself has even sort of called himself a transitional president, you know, which is totally fine with me. Anything to get, you know, us out of where we were, you know, but do you think there's anything about Joe specifically that people sort of can gravitate to? Is there, you know, because we see people getting behind it. We see, you know, people saying, well, he's the, you know, not just the anti-Trump, but, you know, there's got to be something more there. Do you have any thoughts on that specifically?
Yeah. You know, to say that the pandemic made it Trump's election to lose doesn't, you know, that does not mean that, you know, it wasn't somebody else's election to win. You know, I'm not convinced that, you know, just any Democrat could have beaten Trump this time around, even with everything that Trump was up against. A lot of people have talked about this. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of research done about this. I think there's probably been done some already, and people are going to be writing about this and thinking about this for years. But I think at the end of the day, the Democratic Party saw in Joe Biden a known commodity. He had people go ahead.
There was almost a sort of like familiarity to him. You know, it's like this is a guy that we can trust. And I know a lot of people, you know, the word is, I can't think of the word I'm trying to say, but, you know, there's you know, he's a decent, that was the word being thrown around, you know, throughout the election was, oh, he's just a decent human being, right? He cares about people. And, you know, we're talking post-Trump, that's really all that was needed, I feel. You know, I mean, it seems at least like that was all that was needed was sort of a break from the insanity, you know, and Joe Biden comes in, he's this humble, you know, gracious, like, you know, decent human being, decent more than anything, you know, and he's sort of able to say to people, I will fight for you, right? I care about you. I will be, you know, the antithesis of everything that Donald Trump, you know, brought into office. So do you agree with that? Or
yeah, I think that's probably true. And where I was trying to go is that when Biden said those things, I think people tended to believe them and trust, the country, and certainly Democrats, kind of knew who Joe Biden was. He's been in public life for 40 years, more than that. I think there was a certain confidence that his qualities were authentic, and they were, in addition to being qualities that, were very much probably in demand in as an alternative to somebody like Trump. I think there was a sense of comfort with him, and probably, comfort, I think, is probably the best word, with him as a candidate, such that comfort built confidence that he would probably be able to carry the fight to Trump in a way that many of the other Democratic candidates who were younger, probably all of them except for Bernie Sanders, less well-known, less tested, less experienced, might not be able to deliver. So I think that he was in some way, it certainly didn't seem this way going in, but I think in many ways he turned out to be the perfect candidate for the moment, because all of the qualities that he displayed and that he made part of his brand, if you will, are qualities that were so antithetical and so much the opposite of what Trump was all about, that, if you were looking for an alternative to Trump, there could hardly have been a more stark alternative than somebody like Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think that's probably the perfect way to put it. I think that, he really sort of had this collective, mindset. It was like, oh, let's unite, right? Let's unite. Not to get too far off track, but I know something else that we sort of discussed, during the debating season was why there was this very much at first kind of this backing, this very strong backing of Bernie Sanders and everything he was, demanding and talking about. And, we know that he's always had this strong coalition behind him of young people. But one of his main arguments, right, was, oh, I can get the young vote, right? I can get the young vote out. I can get young people to come out and to vote. And that's not something that we saw in the primaries. It was something that he continuously would say, and yet there was no real evidence of that this was happening. Do you think that was, do you think that anyone who was behind Bernie at first sort of saw the light, right, and came to Biden purely for unifying against Trump? Or do you think there were any individuals out there who kind of were like, hey, I actually see, I think Joe might have the right ideas, and Bernie was sort of not, his message is not resonating, because obviously he's been saying the same, the same things for a long time, which in a way you have to respect him for. But at the same time, it's something that, if your message is not getting across, if people are not, turning out, we know how important voter turnout is. So I guess my question is, do you think that could there have possibly been any young voters out there who said, yeah, you know what, Joe's message is resonating with me way more, I'm going to vote for him? Or is it more so than anything just a unification against Trump?
Well, I think there were probably voters at all age brackets, including some young voters who would just naturally gravitated to somebody like Biden as opposed to somebody like Bernie. I'm not a young voter, but I wouldn't presume that young voters are kind of a monolith ideologically, I'm sure, you know, there are progressive young voters, there are more conservative young voters. There were young voters in the middle. And, you know, we, you and I know as a fact, because we connected early on with a group of young Democratic activists here in the state of Connecticut who were all very much aligned with Joe Biden. And we had conversations with them, and these were not folks that, you know, had been in love with Bernie Sanders and then decided that Biden was the way to go. These were folks who were kind of with Biden from the very beginning. Bernie is an interesting phenomenon because even though we had a very high level of support, and certainly among young people, you know, it was, and this is not my, inside I've stolen this from other people, but, you know, he had a very high floor of support, but also a very low ceiling. You know, he was never really able to grow his support, and that came through in the primaries. He just didn't expand the Democratic constituency and draw more young voters in the way that he said he was going to. I think, you know, before we, one thing we have to mention is how important it was for Jim Clyburn, the Democratic congressman from South Carolina, to indicate his support for Joe Biden right before the South Carolina primary, because it was really from the South Carolina primary onward that the Biden train really took off. In folks who remember the 2008 election when Barack Obama first won, there was a school of thought that voters of color were waiting to get behind Barack Obama until they saw that he was someone whom white voters would support. And after Barack Obama started winning some of the early primaries, that was when his support among voters of color really started to tick upward. I think it would be, to the extent that that's true, I think it might have been exact. So the notion then was that white voters gave voters of color permission to throw in their lot with Obama. They being kind of pragmatic, and they wanted to be sure that Obama was somebody who could really carry the nomination forward to victory. I think it was exactly the opposite this time around. I think black voters, voters of color, gave white voters permission to support Joe Biden, because I think that there were, it was amazing how after the South Carolina primary, how Biden just steamrolled from that point onward. I think that there were a lot of voters in the Democratic Party that were uncomfortable with the kind of the apparent leftward drift of the party, and concerned that it was too much of a drift leftward to proved to be a satisfactory alternative to Donald Trump, who saw once voters of color, by and large, delivered South Carolina to Joe Biden, I think they brought the rest of the Democratic Party along with them. And I think they gave, I gave the rest of the party backbone and confidence to support Biden once they kind of stepped up and said, yeah, this is somebody who we feel we can support.
You know, early on, one of the things that we saw was, in fact, I remember talking about it with you specifically, is we saw that black support was actually, I can't remember now if it was Bernie that was getting more of the black support, or was it Joe who was gaining more black support? I know he had a number that was close to what
it was Biden.
It was Biden. Okay. So he had, you know, he had a strong amount of black support. And I think, you know, I remember you bringing up the point that, you know, he's sort of, you know, he was Obama's, you know, right-hand man. Right. So you got to imagine that a lot of black voters were enthusiastic about, you know, him running, sort of, you know, gained a sort of a new appreciation for him because he had worked with Obama. You know, and Bernie wasn't really generating that same amount of enthusiasm. You know, it was very much young people. And, you know, another interesting thing to note was the amount of support that Joe Biden was getting from women, you know, and most notably, suburban women who overwhelmingly supported Trump 4 years ago, you know, just completely, there was a 180 that happened, you know, and it was all of a sudden it was suburban white women, you know, suburban voters really in general, though, but mainly suburban women was the main group, you know, swayed toward Biden. You know, and I think that was, you know, Trump had not kept his promises to the suburban population that he said he would. And, you know, Biden sort of came in with this message of, oh, this is something that, you know, that Trump didn't keep his promise on, but I'm going to, you know, work better for you, do more for you, which I think obviously resonated. This next segment, we are going to be discussing where things currently stand in the political landscape. We spent a good while there talking about, you know, where we were previously, right? Pre-Biden administration and kind of where things stood. But I think it's important that we cover in this next section where things are now with Biden in the White House, a new first family, and the Biden administration obviously already rolling out many executive actions on racial equality, climate change, LGBTQ rights, and much more. One of the first questions I want to ask you is, what do you think has been the most important, if there is one at all, executive action that President Biden has taken thus far?
You know what? The most important action the new first family has taken, we now have first dogs. We have dog pets back in the White House. You know, you can't trust a man that doesn't like dogs. And need I say more? There were no dogs in the Trump White House. Now we have two German Shepherds, I think they are, Champ and Major. So dogs in the White House, that's a good sign. They said they want to get cats too. So I think that's a huge positive development. You know, there's been a lot that's happened in the first 10 days or so. There have been something like 36 executive orders. This has already been a little controversial because there are some folks, even on the left-hand side of the discussion, who are saying that, you know, we got to get to the point where we're doing things legislatively with Republican support, not just executive actions. However, I think the executive actions clearly show that Biden and his administration came in committed to doing things immediately and fast and having as much impact as they possibly could immediately on the things that the country really cares about. And it's important to keep a note that many of the things that he's moving on are things that poll very highly. These are things where there actually is a consensus nationwide. All of the actions that he's taken on climate change and the environment, these are things that poll very positively. So I think the message from the Biden administration is, you know, we'll do things with Republicans if we can, but if we can't, we're just going to move ahead. So, you know, we've lost too much time as it is. We need to move ahead on COVID relief. We need to move ahead on climate change. We need to move ahead on economic justice. There are all kinds of racial justice. There are all kinds of things we got to make progress on. If it takes executive orders to do it, that's, you know, so be it.
I think at this point it's a matter of you know, let's just get as much shit done as we can in the least amount of time, you know, because there really is, as you said, there's really no time to waste. The main things I wanted to make sure that we cover is Biden's COVID relief plan, which I know is extremely bold. We found out this past week that one of the things he wants to accomplish is 100 million doses in 100 days. That is something he kind of, you know, just put out there and said, this is what we're going to do. Dr. Anthony Fauci has already said live on the news that this is feasible. This is a realistic goal that President Biden has set forth. So the question now, I guess, becomes, is this something that we need Republican support for in the Senate, in the House, or is this something that the Democrats can get done without necessarily Republican support and instead a slim Democratic majority? Jim, why don't you explain that for us real quick?
Well, I'm not an expert on the legislative process, but I think that there is a lot that can be done. It's in terms of making sure that the money is available to do what needs to be done. There is legislation which would need Republican support, and there is also a thing called budget reconciliation, which can pass with just a pure majority of the Senate. Which involves, as I understand it, basically tweaks the federal budget that just makes the money available to do things. You know, Biden's message is all about unity, so I'm sure that he would love to have Republican support for what he's doing, but I don't think they're going to wait for that. If it isn't forthcoming, they're going to move ahead and just do what they need to do to get the money available. I believe that Biden has already upped the ante and said that we really should be doing To do 100 million doses in the first 100 days implies 1 million doses a day. We were kind of already doing that. He has said recently, I believe, that we could really be doing 1.5 million a day, which would get us to 150 million at the end of the 100 days, which is obviously a better goal. But it's going to take money. It's going to take money for production. It's going to take money for distribution. It's going to take money for vaccination facilities. You know, this is an existential crisis. We shouldn't be, at the end of the day, people, the country, citizens, aren't going to care how we got there. They're just going to care that it was done or not. So I think the Biden folks understand this. I think at the end of the day, they're going to do what they need to do to kind of get it done. I think, you know, again, this is a communications thing. I think that should be, from a communication standpoint, the focus in terms of talking about all these things. It's all about getting stuff done. It's not about how you get there. It's not about the process. It's about just getting it done, because after so many months of dealing with this crisis, I think that's what the country, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, I think that's what they're looking for, to get this behind us so that we can move on.
I completely agree. And I think that, you know, people, I think that it's a good point that you brought up, that people aren't going to remember how we got there. They're just going to remember that we did, right? And one of the things President Biden has said, in the past few weeks, you know, is this is something that we are going to get through together. And the only way it's going to get done is if we do it together. If everybody's committed to taking the necessary precautions that we need to do to get through it, mask wearing, you know, getting yourself tested when available, just taking, you know, simple measures such as washing your hands, social distancing, all this sort of stuff that collectively, as long as we do, we will get through quicker than if we didn't do it, you know. And there's still a lot of people that are hesitant to do even the most basic of things. But it's really, really important that we do these things that are necessary to get through this. And the quicker we do them, you know, the more we do now, the less we have to do later. Because, you know, God forbid this lasts, you know, longer than another full year, right? So we really need to step up and make sure that we're just doing our part. And that's really what it comes down to. There was a very strong message from Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, this past week. She said, you know, as I think you brought up, you know, that Democrats are going to do what they need to do to get this done. And she said, in a press conference this week, or rather it was an address, I believe, to, House members. She said, we're going to do this, with or without Republican support. That's a very strong message from the Speaker of the House, indicating that Democrats aren't going to sit around and wait. This is something that President Biden is, very much taking seriously. We know COVID is at the top of his list in terms of, what to improve and what to get done. So Nancy Pelosi is, making that clear as well to fellow members of the House. Republicans, obviously, I believe there was an article this week saying Republicans are still very much opposed to the 1.9 or however much it was, $1.9 right, trillion-dollar stimulus package that President Biden has proposed, and don't seem to be backing down from that. However, there are also Democrats who, as we know, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, right, who is sticking to his claim that this is too much money. They're not going to get this done. And, this is why budget reconciliation is really being considered right now. So Democrats have a path. Will they get there? Through the means of Republican support, bipartisan support, rather. We will see. It doesn't look likely. Will they more, likely have to use budget reconciliation, as we talked about? Yes, very, very likely. But again, this is all stuff that is going to develop in the coming weeks that we will, we will know soon enough. We couldn't do this podcast without talking about the direction that we are currently headed in. What is the direction that this country is currently headed in? How do we feel about where things are heading? And where are we even heading? That is what we're going to discuss in this last segment. One of the main concerns, I think, of really the general population right now is, will we have, is this vaccine going to be rolled out fast enough that we really can achieve this 100 million dose in 100 days, this goal that President Biden has put forth? People obviously want to get out of this pandemic as quick as possible. I think the hope right now, based on people, friends, and, people that I've talked to as of late, the general consensus seems to be, people are hoping by summer that we will really have turned the corner on this thing. Do we think, especially with the news of the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is pending approval right now, is, likely going to be approved for emergency usage, do we feel that with the current state of things, we are headed in, not to mention what President Biden has also put forth in his plan as well, do we feel that we are headed in the right direction as of now?
Well, time will tell. One of the things we maybe should have pointed out at the beginning is that that Luke and I are coming from these, we're coming at these issues from two very different places demographically. There are, 45 years between the two of us?
45 years would be precise, yes.
45 years. So my sense of where we're going is constrained by the fact that, the amount of time that I'm going to be around is considerably less than...
Well, let's not get all dark.
Well, but I think there is something else that I think we should talk about, because it is kind of an overriding principle for the going forward. In 2008, when Barack Obama became president, I did a little bit of work on the campaign, so I did phone banking and such, and talk to voters, and it was a really rewarding experience. And of course, if you're a basically if you're an individual, a citizen with kind of a progressive sensibility, and you're really interested in the country moving ahead on issues of economic justice, dealing with the climate change crisis, racial justice, making bending the arc of the universe more closely toward justice, as Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of the universe. You know, you were thrilled when Barack Obama won. You thought that this was an incredibly meaningful event. I remember getting, after the election, getting an email from the Obama campaign saying, "This is great. Thank you so much. You know, we did it. We're going to be in touch soon with what's next." And I remember thinking, what do you mean, what's next? We won. Game over, right? Now, clearly, I think if the last 4 years have taught us anything, they have taught us that democracy is a fragile thing. And it is not, it's never a sure thing. And, you know, there was this quote from Benjamin Franklin at the time of the Constitutional Convention, I think, that was much bandied about over the last couple of years, when Benjamin Franklin came out of the convention hall and the people said, "Dr. Franklin, what will it be, a monarchy or a republic?" And he said, "A republic if you can keep it." And his message to them and to us was, it's incumbent on all of us to play a role in keeping our democracy. So the battle is never won. It's always ongoing. You know, we kind of squeak through this time around. If you're a progressive individual, your view will be, we squeak through this time around. Trump is gone. Some order has been restored to the universe and to the management of our government, but it's still a fragile victory. And so I think the message to everybody is, you got to stay involved, and you got to do whatever you need, whatever you feel comfortable doing to get involved. You got to read reputable news media, not freaking Facebook and Twitter. You got to read a reputable mainstream publication. You got to get really diligent about and discerning regarding what is true and what is not. You got to stay informed. You got to vote. And you got to support the candidates that you believe in. You know, everybody's responsibility in a democracy is to stay involved. A democracy, it's not, you know, it's not a gift, it's a responsibility. And, you know, voting is not a burden, it's a responsibility, it's an obligation, I think, in a democracy. And so staying informed. So, you know, what's next? We don't know. But we have to fight for what we believe in, and we have to stay involved. Because if we don't stay involved, it's too easy for it all to slip away, as we saw over the last 4 years.
This is, you know, I don't think that anyone, I truly don't think that anyone can say that we took this election for granted. You know, there was by no means a guarantee that when Biden came in and he was crowned as the, you know, the going to be leading the Democratic Party, he was, you know, the one that was elected. There was no guarantee whatsoever that he was going to beat Trump. There was a lot of talk that, yes, you know, he has the best chance against beating him, but by no means was there a guarantee. And I think that for that reason, you know, people were very, you know, like we agreed, we were very cautiously optimistic because we wanted to believe so bad that this was going to happen, that Trump was going to be gone and going to be beat for good, which should have happened 4 years ago. If we hadn't had the system that we do, but maybe that's, you know, a topic for another episode. But, you know, the idea is that nobody took this for granted. Everybody fought really hard. You know, as you mentioned before, the turning point, I really think, was Jim Clyburn in South Carolina, you know, sort of endorsing Joe Biden and sort of sending the message that this is who we support. This is who we're standing behind, this time around. And, you know, this guy is going to lead us, you know, in the right, down the right path and away from all the, you know, grotesque, backwards policies of the Trump administration, and, you know, sort of, you know, get us back on the path that we need to be on. So, you know, it's definitely something that nobody took for granted. And, you know, there is grassroots organizing, and there was, you know, protests, and there was, you know, election officials and contributors reaching out to everyone they could, people making calls. I know my dad here is very, diligent about making calls to battleground states, which Wisconsin and others, you know, to get, support, build support among Democrats. So there was a lot that was done. And I think, you know, it's not like a one and done kind of thing. You know, this is the enthusiasm we need, you know, and as you said earlier, democracy is a fragile thing. And if there's one thing we learn from this election, it's that democracy is fragile and it's precious, and we need to take care of it. You know, this is the system we have. This is what our country, you know, thrives on. You know, this is why we are who we are. So we need to maintain that and preserve that. You know, always. Just one more thing I wanted to note before we close out the podcast is the idea, because I know you brought up, you know, democracy and, you know, how voting the sacred obligation. Voting is a sacred obligation of the people, right? It's our duty. It's not just, you know, something we're given, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, vote if you want, right? No, this is something that needs to be done. We are, as citizens of the country, it is our moral and sacred obligation to do our part and vote, you know, whoever that may be for. All that matters is that we vote, right? And something that I always talk about with people who are close to me is that, well, not always talk about, but, you know, this is something that I try to get people to understand, and I wish more people my age understood, is that, you know, politics, because it bothers me when people say, oh, politics is, I don't get involved in politics. You know, it's not something that, you know, I don't, and you know, every election it's like, oh, who are you supporting? And they're like, oh, I don't, you know, I don't care. I don't like either of them. You know, it's the sort of thing that really gets under my skin, only because, you know, politics is so much more than what people think it is. It is so much more than just Democrats versus Republicans. It's more than just, you know, this idea versus that idea. It's, you know, it's our world. It's our, you know, our livelihood. It you know, the federal government controls who we are as people, controls, like, you know, our, you know, our basically our well-being. You know, the system that we live under, you know, is a function of politics. And so if we want a better life for for ourselves, we have to work for it, you know. So this is a point that I always try to get across to people, because it's not, you know, something to be take for granted, especially with voting. You know, it's our duty. So I guess I want to get I know you're going to be in agreement with me. We've talked about this. My dad and I have talked about this extensively before, but I still want to get his take on it, because it's something that you know, is very important to me. And the craziest part about it is, you know, up until 4 years ago, just a second to set the record straight, up until 4 years ago, you know, I was one of those people. I wasn't invested at all You know, and then Trump comes in and just shakes up the system, not in a good way, obviously. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, here, you know, this, so this is, you know, this is what politics is all about. Like this stuff can happen, you know, it's kind of like a wake up call, not just for myself, but I think for a lot of people. So, just to close out, I want to get your thoughts, on, you know, on just that, what I was talking about, you know, politics being about so much more than it appears to be on the surface.
Yeah, you know what? I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the politics is the mistake that people make, and the misconception they have is that politics is something that takes place in some place many miles from where people live their lives that has nothing to do with their lives, and it's all bullshit, and that, you know, what we do as citizens makes no difference whatsoever. I think that could not be farther than the truth. We have, for the last 4 years, we have lived in a very different country than we would have lived in if Donald Trump had not been elected president. For the next 4 years, we're going to live in a very different country than we would have been living in if Joe Biden had not been elected president. This stuff matters. And I think the deal is, when you live in a democracy, when you live in a system, in a society such as we have, the implicit deal is that you take part and you pay attention and you stay engaged and you play your role in a system that such as we have, where individuals, if they exercise their roles, they have a lot of power. You know, that's the deal. The deal you make is that the implicit agreement you make is that you're going to, you know, do what you need to do to exercise that power responsibly, and not kind of stand at the side and say, well, it doesn't affect me, because it does. It does every day. So I think that's been the lesson of the last 4 years. I think that the individual decisions that people make as voters, they matter. And whether or not we pay attention, that matters. Whether or not we're involved, that matters. And what we do matters. And if we, you know, don't choose to get involved, we can't be sorry about what the consequences of that are. And if we do choose to get involved and engaged and fight for what we believe in, then, you know, we have some hope of making this country the place that we want it to be. End of diatribe.
Well, I'm glad you, I think we're obviously completely in agreement on this, you know, that it's so much more than what people think it is. And obviously, you know, we don't talk about that to we don't want to generalize it and say all people are like this. They're not. But I think that, you know, young people especially, if I'm going to be honest, aren't as involved as they should be. I think they're getting better. I do. I really feel good about that. But I think that there's so much more work that needs to be done to engage young people. And there's so much more that, you know, speaking as a young person from my generation, that we could be doing. My hope with this podcast is for everybody to find something that they enjoy. Each week, I want to bring a new guest onto the show to talk about really anything that has to do with life. This week, we discussed politics. That is something that is of great interest to both my dad and I, which is the reason we talked about it. But every week, I want to bring something new to the table. I want people to be able to bring various perspectives and diverse opinions, and really whatever they can bring, I want to hear it, I want to discuss it. And that's the whole reason I started this podcast. And it is also the reason I hope that you guys will support it and keep listening as we move forward. I think we had a great discussion this week. I hope that I will have great discussions in the future with my my future guests. And I just want to thank you, Dad, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. And if there's anything that you would like to say, I want to give you the opportunity to say it now.
You know, we spent a lot of time today talking about the past, but I think the most exciting thing to think about and to talk about is the future and where we go from here. And, you know, I'm feeling a lot better about the future than I was a year ago. I think there's a lot of possibility that's been opened up to us if we want it and if we're willing to kind of work toward it and to stay involved and to, you know, put ourselves out there to make this the kind of country in the world we want it to be. So let's do it.
I couldn't agree more. I think the closing message of this podcast should be, let's do it. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.